Welcome to the Drama Teacher Podcast, brought to you by Theater Folk, the Drama Teacher Resource Company. I'm Lindsay Price. Hello. I hope you're well. Thanks for listening. This is episode 189, and you can find any links to this episode in the show notes, which are at theaterfolk.com/episode189. And today, we're talking about lifelines, right? How many of you have ever thought of theater as a lifeline? I have, for sure. I meet students every day who tell me that theater saved their life in one way or another. I remember a particular student telling me after being through two hurricanes that being in a play was the only thing getting her through. And our guest today has a deep connection with theater as a lifeline for very good reason. So I don't think I've ever done this before, but I think I should. So I don't know if I'm going to do it right or wrong, or I'm just going to do it. But this isn't really a warning, because I don't think you should be warned away from intense topics. But this podcast contains intense topics and mention of sexual assault. But at the end of it, we have theater as a lifeline. So let's get to it, shall we? All right. Hello, everybody. Today I am talking to Amy Stryker. Hello, Amy.
Hello.
Hello. Tell everybody where in the world you are located.
I'm in Connecticut.
Very cool. Okay. Now, Amy has a story. I think it's really a good story to share, but then also just sort of the aftermath. I think the aftermath of the your story is what's really interesting. I think is what's going to be really interesting to our listeners. And we're going to get into the bulk of this. We're going to talk about empathy a little bit, and you will see, dear listener, why empathy is going to be the hallmark of our conversation today. So, all right, Amy. So, what happened to you when you were 17?
All right. Well, you know, I was born a theater folk. I was born a
you're one of us, eh?
Oh my God. I mean, don't even start. But I was definitely born a musical theater ham and extremely like type A driven. Like that was what I knew my life was going to be like, that I was going to, you know, go to college and study musical theater at University of Michigan and be on Broadway. And that was it. When I was 15, I'd been studying with a really big voice coach in New York who I really, he really looked up to. And, you know, when I was 17, he molested me. And that was obviously a complete shock to me. And I just, you know, completely froze and just, like, you know, left my body and don't remember anything that happened. And I really kept that inside for, you know, almost a year until I finally told my mother the April of my senior year. And we were going to get, you know, go for therapy and all that. And then, you know, 2 weeks later, I just had a really bad stomach ache that wasn't going away. And my dad took me.
Cool. Now, before we get to the stomach ache park, which is the part that I knew, I think that you've hit on something which I think is really important to mention, because about how many of those people who are listening have students who have mentors or teachers, you know, not necessarily in the classroom, but maybe just like you had someone who they looked up to, who were not good people. and
I mean, yeah, you know, this voice at first, I have to say, so whenever I talk on podcasts, my mom's like, you have to say how old he is. You know, he was 60 and I was 15. And so, you know, I really looked up to him. You know, he actually wrote a letter to my parents asking if he could be my godfather. You know, it was a whole kind of typical grooming thing. But, you know, I really looked up to this guy because, you know, he was one of the top teachers in New York. And I think we really connected because I was always kind of an old soul when I was younger and always connected to, you know, trees and spirituality. And he seemed to have this like deeper side too. So, you know, I really looked up to this teacher as someone that, you not only could give me, you know, theater and vocal skills, but you could kind of nurture that kind of part of me that loved, like, the inspiration behind creating and theater and art. And so when, you know, he started molesting me, not only did I lose faith in my mentor and just have this whole, you know, confusion, but I also kind of lost trust in, you know, what had always really inspired me, you know, in theater. You start to question everything, you know, and so my world just kind of like changed overnight, you know, and I think, well, should I go on with my story?
Yes. Yes. Cause unfortunately you are only just beginning. This is not the, this is not the,
I
awful,
know.
This is not the awful part. This is,
in the end, I'm scared. It's a happy ending.
No, yes, yeah. You know what? I apologize for being. That was a flippant thing for me to say, and I don't think that.
God, you're like, if you were a playwright, you're like spoiling my story. So anyway, you know, my dad, you know, took me to the emergency room that night, and everything just escalated really quickly. Apparently, on the way there. My mom said my cheeks just like perforated because there was so much pressure building up inside the abdomen. And if this sounds really dramatic, it is. So I actually wrote a full-length drama based on this, by the way. But so when I got to the emergency room, I guess, again, I'm just telling what I've been told. But, you know, the surgeons cut into me and my stomach literally hit the ceiling of the operating room because there was so much internal pressure. I guess I had gotten sepsis from like a blood clot. And so if I had gotten there minutes later, the fluid would have gone to all of my internal organs and I would have died. So it was really kind of like divine timing. And so I had just gotten my college acceptance letters that week. So now I was in a coma for months, and I woke up, you know, nearly a year later, having no idea what was going on, thinking I was still going to Michigan. And, you know, I had been healthy my whole life, so it was really like waking up in the twilight zone. But I think that was also a big advantage on my part because, like, I didn't know how to be sick, and I was also kind of like the same stubborn brat I was before I got sick. So, like, you know, I never, you know, as a kid, like, creativity, it was literally my life force. Like, I was always creating something. You know, I got, you know, sent to the principal's office because, like, I would, like, tap dance on my teacher's desk when she left the room. So that had always spurred me on. So I think the biggest fear when I woke up from a coma was, like, oh my God, like, I'm going to be a has-been at 18. As a performer, all you want to do is connect to the world. And I really thought, like, I'm not going to make my mark, you know, and I had so much ambition and all that. And now I can't even go to college. And then the doctor tells me finally that, you know, I don't have a stomach anymore and I can't eat or drink. And they don't know if I'll ever be able to again. So, you know, it was a lot to take in at once. But I think what really kept me going is, you know, my creative spirit really never died because, you know, it's amazing. It was all I knew how to do at that time. And I think that's really what made me not feel victimized and really feel like myself, even when my life had changed overnight. I mean, I'm like glossing over how terribly, you know, frustrating and ups and downs and all that stuff. But I think that general mindset was kind of the constant that helped me through the many, many ups and downs. And so I was discharged from the hospital months later because, you know, I was medically stable and, you know, I was not in a life or death situation anymore. And I think I credit that because, you know, my amazing family just literally stayed in the ICU with me for all those months, which is why this full-length drama I'm working on is kind of like a comedy because the six of us living in a small ICU for months, believe me, they were all ready to kick us out by the time I was okay. But anyway, I was discharged from the hospital because I was stable, but the only thing was that, like, I didn't have a digestive system, you know, so the doctors were basically like, okay, like, you're stable now, go home, but, you know, you can't eat or drink, and, you know, we'll send you a bunch of IV fluid every week, and, you know, we'll stay in touch, you know. So, like, I mean, it's kind of easier to be in, like, the nest of a hospital when you're protected against, like, you know, faucets, and, like, all of a sudden everything becomes a trigger. You know, I couldn't be with people. It was a very scary way to live. Yeah.
Oh, gosh, yeah, I can't imagine. And, I mean, how many of folks who have been through the same thing that you have been through are there? I mean, there must be.
No, yeah. I was like written up in a medical journal because, like, I don't have a diagnosis. They're still not sure exactly what happened. It's just like this kind of thing. I mean, there are people with like short gut syndrome, and you know, some symptoms are similar to like Crohn's and things like that. But no, that like I was really, you know, and that was why, you know, I'll get to how long it took me before I could eat or drink again. But you know, one of the things that took so long is, you know, not only waiting for my insides to heal, we had to track down a surgeon who had enough guts to and thinking skills to, you know, they literally had to figure out how to do something to make me a digestive system. Like there was no manual to this, you know.
No.
But coming out of the hospital was really difficult, especially, you know, the not drinking was just awful. You know, we were discharged in the summer. But a month after being discharged from the ICU, I saw that a community theater was holding auditions for Oliver. And I was pretty weak at this point. I mean, I could walk around, but like, you know, not in great shape. But I'm like, you know what? I think it would be good for me. Because, you know, when I thought of theater, I always thought of community. Like, if I was in the ensemble, at least I would have something to do. And so I went for the audition. And, like, I was just kind of tracheotomy, like, pulled out of my throat. So, like, I didn't know how much singing I could do. But I remember belting a song and coming out and thinking, oh, my God, I'm still really good. And so they called me up and they gave me the lead of Nancy and Oliver. And, of course, they double casted me in case, like, I fell over and died. But, like, it was such an amazing experience. Like, you know, of course, there were moments of, like, a lot of difficulty, like, you know, seeing everyone else have water bottles. Like, those things would just be very, you know, hard. You don't think about how hard those things are. But it was, but I think doing that was the community feeling I needed to really feel like I had some sense of sanity. And I think that's what theater has always been for me.
You know what?
You know, it's always been, yeah.
Yeah. Because I just want to, so I want to like really hit this home for folks, like just in terms of when you growing up, that theater was the thing for you. And then you had an experience where it seems that trial, that trust in theater and that love of theater was taken away. And then an additional thing where you sort of realized that it wasn't taken away, that it was your lifeline in a sense.
You know, and that actually comes up a few times in my story to, you know, I'm going to go back to the drama that I wrote that, you know, one of the last lines is like, you're my theater, you're my art, but you know, you're no longer my story. And I think it's because the art really helped me. But you know, the thing about being in this community is, now I do a lot of like theater outreach work with like traumatized populations and military and things like that. And yeah, it was known in like, it's supposedly like the Greek plays of like Sophocles were originally meant for military veterans to, you know, actually reenact what had happened to them so they could share it with their community. Like, there is so much healing when we can tell our story. And I think that's why theater is such an important thing for people. I know it was for me. And so, you know, doing Oliver was a big part of my healing process. But then when the show was over, you know, I still couldn't eat or drink. And I was kind of left with like, oh my gosh, you know, what to do now? And it's amazing how, you know, what I learned is like that creative energy, you know, that was the only thing making me feel sane. Because, you know, I mean, just to give you perspective, you know, after something like this, you should definitely be in therapy. So, you know, my parents took me to a therapist out of the hospital. And the therapist tells my parents, you know, she can't eat and she can't drink. You know, it would be cruel of me to make her sit in a room and talk about her feelings. You know, she's just hungry. Like, let her get better and then we can start working on that. So, you know, I think theater was my, it was the only therapy I could be capable of, because he was right. You know, in a case like that, you can't just sit and talk about how miserable you are, because not being able to eat and drink, you should be miserable, you know. So, you know, after the show, I just tried to find different ways to harness my creativity. Like, one of the things I did, you know, you learn how to be resourceful. Like, I started a chocolate business because I was so hungry. And I missed, like, just going to Stop and Shop and buying candy. And I found that, like, if I could, like, you know, make art with the candy and create, it was a way I could, like, be with that hunger, you know, in a way that, like, somehow was manageable. So I found little things like that, just, like, creative ways. So anyway, to jump over a large expanse of time, after 3 years, I was 21, and I had my 13th reconstructive surgery, and this was going to be, like, the biggie, and that was going to hook me up to eat. You know, it was 19 hours, and it took 3 shifts of nurses and doctors, and I thought, you know, after this, like, oh, my God, I can eat. But then, you know, because this is not, like, a tested kind of official surgery, they were kind of just seeing how things go. My wound just burst open a week later, and I had to be air vac'd across the country, which was, you know, obviously, you know, the whole thing about healing from PTSD, you know, post-traumatic stress disorder, is, you know, you feel like a trigger or anxiety, and then you're supposed to tell yourself, like, oh, no, the trauma is past. It's not here. So, like, you know, I would feel like, oh, my God, my stomach, like, what if my wound burst open? I would tell myself, no, that was before. This is now. And so it was just, you know, terrifying to be, like, shipped across the country. And then also what was so scary was to hear, you know, doctors really not having any answers. Like, if you can't put your faith in doctors, like, what do you do? And I found the answer, actually, because I was stuck there for months, and I was really, now I was just mad, because I felt like this had been, like, done to me. And so what happened was that, you know, my mom started bringing me cheap, like, art supplies to the hospital, just so I had something to do. And, you know, I'd always been into theater, but never really, you know, painted. But, you know, picking up a paintbrush and painting for the first time was another way I found, like, freedom in that creative energy. You know, I found that it was a way to express things, that, you know, it was a healthy way of getting things out. And I think, you know, the only healthy thing is to get things out. And so that really helped me transform all that uncertainty and anger. And, you know, the art really got me through, especially when, like, I didn't have the words to really, you know, express how I was feeling. So anyway, that led to actually putting together a one-woman musical about my life, Gutless and Grateful. I think without the art kind of stirring up all those feelings, you know, I don't think I ever would have been able to verbalize them. And how Gutless and Grateful came about was taking all of the journal entries I had written and some songs. And I thought, you know what, like, I miss singing. I miss the stage. I want to put together just a cabaret act. And that was really how it started. And so I premiered it for the first time in 2012. And, you know, the news stories had talked about my medical stuff. But, my sexual abuse, no one had ever talked about. So I remember I was even, like, embarrassed to talk about it. So I put, like, one sentence in, thinking, like, oh, my God, I hope the reviewers don't hear it. You know, that was how much farther I had to go in my healing. And it's been amazing. You know, I've been doing this show for almost 6 years. And, you know, now I'm, you know, a keynote speaker for sexual assault events. You know, I'm doing mental health programming. And, you know, I think I credit the show for bringing my healing full circle, because it was really an excuse to keep talking about it, and more importantly, to keep connecting with it. You know, I think, you know, after every show, you know, people like line up and just start telling their stories. And I think the best thing about Gutless and Grateful was, for the first time, like I was telling my story, but, you know, I actually felt relatable, because it wasn't about just like, you know, Amy's whose stomach exploded. You know, it was the universal kind of narrative of, you know, fighting adversity and dealing with uncertainty. And I think what makes theater so great, it's like, you know, it kind of pares down everything and, you know, to the essentials of like, what is the nature of like human struggle? And I think that's really what made me feel normal. So the long story and the statistics are, it turned into, you know, 6 years unable to eat and drink and 27 surgeries and a lot of ups and downs, but and still a lot of ups and downs. But I think the one constant has been like, whatever trauma produces, you know, anger, frustration, you know, fear, you know, I think I started viewing that all as energy. And that energy is something that as artists, we can, you know, we can turn into something else. And I think that's what never let me get into like the victim mindset, that I could always do something with that.
Well, that whole notion of human struggle, I think for thousands and thousands and thousands of years, it doesn't matter how we've changed, we all struggle. And that's how you deal with that struggle. As you're right, it just makes it a universal thing. People in the audience don't have to have had their stomach exploded to relate their own struggle.
And that was all, you know, what my TED talk was about. You know, I called it being a detourist, because, like, you know, who hasn't had a detour in life? You know, and it was a way to like kind of break down the, you know, well, I've been through this and I've been through that, you know, because I've always felt that, you know, I don't think we should find our uniqueness on what, you know, based on what we've been through, but what we choose to do with it. So, you know, calling it all like a detour, and just, you know, being a detour is really just having the ability to show up when life doesn't go as we expect. And just, even though we don't know what the path ahead is, you know, we're curious, you know, and we explore, you know. And, you know, I trained like acting through like, you know, Stella Adler School. And one of the first things we learned was, you know, having awareness without judgment. You know, it's the same kind of thing. And I think as actors, one of the main things they try to, you know, get into is that we have to have empathy and, you know, non-judgment when we're embodying characters. And that just makes us better people.
Well, that's something that's come up, you know, time and time again when in talking to teachers about, you know, 21st century students, is how do we teach that? How do we teach empathy? How do we get everyone to sort of get, well, and teenagers, you know, it's a time where all you're doing is looking in, you know, and how do you actually find the skills to look out at other people and empathize?
Right. I mean, in a scene, you're forced to be, you know, an empathetic collaborator. You know, it's forced, like, give and take. Otherwise, you're not being a generous, you know, scene partner. You know, it was actually really interesting for me, because I finally did go to college at 25 years old, and I spent a semester at the Eugene O'Neill Center, which was amazing. But, you know, it was a very intensive, you know, group devising work and acting work, and you know, the biggest message, and as with any good theater company, should be, you know, it's really the power of team and listening and building trust within your company.
Oh, absolutely. You know, because that it all comes back to that word community, doesn't it? You know, that's the thing that that speaks, I think, you know, whether it's a community of actors or a community of people watching who are having their own struggles, or it's all about community.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
How do you, so, and just not hinging on that word empathy, how do you teach people to have empathy for you instead of pity?
Well, that, I mean, I always say, you know, my goal with doing Gutless and Grateful is, you know, I don't want people to be inspired by my story. I really want them to be empowered. And, you know, doing my show has expanded into, you know, workshops and lectures where I've kind of boiled down. And again, this stuff is always easier seen in retrospect. But I found that, like, what helped me through, because, you know, one of the first questions people ask is, like, how did you make it through? You know, I call them, like, my four hardcore skills to resilience. And they may seem like kind of cheesy, inspirational words, but they were actually very serious survival strategies that helped me survive, which is, you know, hope, gratitude, creativity, and sharing your story. And I hope by making, you know, starting it off in those general terms, you know, I'm showing that, you know, look, like, I was just a theater kid like anyone else. You know, if you had told me, you know, that I was going to go through all this, then I would have been like, no, I'm not going to even try. But I think it's amazing that, you know, it shows when the human spirit is tested, you know, if we, you know, are willing to kind of take that journey, you know, anyone can really use these kind of resources and make it through. I think what really psychs us out is when we think about the bigger picture. I know if, like, I had known the bigger picture, like, oh, it was going to be 6 years, you know, and I would have just said, nope. Not happening.
Well, it's so true. It's so true that you know, when we, the big picture is a daunting just life, you know.
Exactly.
not even let's not even talk about, you know, what's it like to go through like 6 years of surgeries. Just life, the big picture is daunting for a lot of folks. But it's one day at a time, right? It's just like, it's one. And actually I like this, the notion of it's kind of one expression at a time and one sharing story at a time, and just like and just finding ways to, it is empowering to think about how creativity and how theater can be change your life is not exactly what I'm looking for here, but can move your life forward, right?
Exactly. You know, and it teaches you basic life skills, and I think the best way to learn anything is by practicing it. And I think, you know, theater asks us to do that, to show up, you know.
Oh yeah, like to show up, to be to be there for your, you know, for somebody else, you know, as opposed to just thinking
exactly about
yourself. To speak up, and also just that whole notion of self-expression and trying to find the words, whether it's words or whether it's, you know, it's paint or whether it's whatever it is, trying to find the way to express instead of leaving it inside. I think it's all
exactly.
It's all things. So what's the future hold? Like, where, okay, so here's, this is, it's been, theater's been your lifeline and your survival tactic. And now that you are, you know, doing TED Talks and you've done more, you have done more than a lot of people have done when they think of a life in the theater. You know, if you've already written a musical and a one person show, you've already performed that, you've already been a TED presenter. So where will you go next and where will theater take you next?
Well, I think, you know, first of all, doing Gutless and Grateful has been an amazing experience. You know, I really thought of it as just going to be, you know, a one-time thing. And, you know, I've been touring it to theaters for the past, you know, whatever years. But what's been even more amazing is being able to take it to, you know, conferences and schools and use it for so many different things, you know, for, you know, trauma education, for women's leadership, for business. You know, I never thought I'd be the keynote speaker for like entrepreneur, you know, conventions and things. So that has just like opened my perception as a detour. But also, you know, I think as an artist, you know, we want to keep challenging ourselves. And so, you know, if I just did Gutless and Grateful for the rest of my life, I wouldn't be happy. So now I've kind of, you know, gone back to my artistic roots. I think performing that show over and over again was a very huge part of my healing. But now I'm really diving into a bunch of other projects and really feeling how, you know, creating things has always made me happy. You know, I mentioned that I'm 30 and I'm graduating college next week, which I'm super excited about.
Awesome. Yes. Congratulations.
Thank you. But my final project was actually, I conducted hundreds and hundreds of pages of oral history interviews with my family about my grandma who survived the Holocaust. and I had wanted to make a documentary drama kind of thing. And so I did it for the first time this weekend, and it was just so powerful. And it felt, you know, honestly, it felt good to create something that wasn't about myself. I think, you know, there's a time for, you know, doing all this self-devised theater was important. But I think, you know, it did its job and it moved that story out of me. And now I want to capture like other stories. So, you know, this was, I feel like this is only the beginning with this piece. I called it Fibers because my grandma survived the camps because she was an amazing seamstress. So the Nazis forced her to sew their uniforms. But like, I'm really excited to keep workshopping this piece. And I'm also, you know, I have three full length dramas I'm developing at once, which are all going to have a production next year. So I'm really excited about that. And, you know, listen, I feel like if this had never happened, I would have, you know, probably, I definitely would have been creating, but I don't think I would have been creating from this kind of a place. You know, it gives you an awareness that you didn't have. So, you know, you end up having to be very thankful for it. You know, I want to go back to artists, but, you know, having always been informed by what I've been through. And, you know, like I said, my first talk was about, you know, being a detour. My second TED talk, which won't be live till this summer, was all about healing through the archetypal hero's journey, which is like a storyline that we see in every, you know, adventure novel, or, you know, it's the narrative of, you know, going into the darkness and battling demons and coming back to society with a gift to give. But I talk about how once you've come out of that darkness, it's not like you just go back to that ordinary, innocent world you knew. It's, you know, what Joseph Campbell calls mastery of the two worlds. So like, you'll always have those two worlds within you. And I think for those of us that have survived, you know, trauma or adversity, you know, just the job becomes learning how to balance them. Because the trauma never goes away. You know, you just have to figure out how to manage it so it can inform what you do and not like run your life.
You come to a new sense of stasis, you know, you have a new world that becomes your world. And
right. And I think that's why theater can be such a great tool, because it gives us a container to manage that other world in, you know, at least for me.
What a great way to put it. It's like a container of, you know, like, and, you know, particularly if you are dealing with trauma or you're dealing with, and there's, you know, there's so many levels of trauma, you know,
to put it into
containers so that you can live your life.
You know, it's not just trauma. It's a detour.
Yes.
It's anything that hasn't gone like you expect. And actually, you know, on my blog, you know, I have a Why Not Wednesday column, which is a weekly thing where I have any detourist write in about any kind of detour in their life. And, you know, it does not have to be like a huge life shattering trauma. It can be like, oh, you know, I got a new job. And, you know, it can even be a good trauma. Like, one person like quit their job as a doctor and became like a surfer in Hawaii, and it led them to this and that, you know. But what's so fascinating is, you know, I have over 100 stories by now, but what I love is each detour is different, but you can still trace the same emotional arc, you know. And more importantly, you can see that in the process of actually just writing it, some of them are realizing themselves for the first time what they've got from it. And I think that's the power of, you know, expressive writing, of creativity, is, you know, we don't get out of trauma automatically knowing what the gifts are. You know, we have to do the work as artists. You know, I think in creating, we find that meaning, you know?
Well, and I think that as we wrap this up, it's like, well, what is a life without detours? You know, that I think that when we're all 15 years old, we're all thinking that this is the path that's happening and it's a straight one and there's no detours and I know exactly how my life is going to work out. And life just doesn't work that way.
You know, I had a director that would always talk about, you know, funny thing happened on the way to the forum. And he would always use that as an example that, like, if this and that did not happen, you know, on the way to the forum, you know, there would be no story. The guy would just make it to the forum and there would be no play. It's true. And I've never forgotten that, you know, it's like theater is, you know, plot twist.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Well, that's what you want. Like what is a, if we had a story where, you know, A gets to B, the end. That's theater's not like that, and life is certainly not like that.
Exactly.
Amy, thank you so much for talking to me today. It was
thank you.
It's a pleasure to hear the. I love theater, lives in the theater, and about how when people have. You know, they go with the detours, and that you're using theater in your life in a way that is not the traditional. And I think that's important. I think it's really important for people to see that there are many ways in which creativity and theater can be incorporated into a wonderful life.
I mean, that you as a closing statement, I'll say that, you know, creativity was my life force. Like, again, like I never got 1 ounce of therapy through any of this because there was never a circumstance really where I could. And I had to, you know, theater is a lot of trial and error, you know, improv and messing up and play and like, and learning to fail. And I definitely struggled with a lot. You and definitely had a lot of medical setbacks, a lot of emotional setbacks. But again, like going back to theater as a container, I mean, I think when I viewed it with that perspective, I felt like I couldn't fall. You know, I always had that lens of creativity, and maybe it's just like how I grew up that I was always like that. But now when I give presentations to you, I say like, you don't need to think you're an artist to create. Like, we need to adapt those skills, like take out a napkin and start doodling, but like find some way to express yourself where you're not pressuring yourself to just think yourself out. Cause believe me, I think the one thing I've learned is that our minds are so overrated.
I hear ya. Okay. Thank you so much, Amy.
Thank you.
Thank you, Amy. Before we go, let's do some Theater Folk news. Okay, so any links to today's episode can be found in the show notes at theaterfolk.com/episode189. And we've been talking about lifelines today, and we actually have one that we would like to share with you. And I don't know, it seems a bit weird to do, but I really think of this as a lifeline. Are you a drama teacher just starting out, or have you gone back to the classroom after a break? Or maybe you've been in the classroom for 20 years teaching, or maybe you've been in the classroom for 20 years teaching English, and all of a sudden you find yourself with a drama class on your schedule. Or how about this? You are a one-man band. You're the only drama teacher in your school. Where's your lifeline? We've got one for you. We're really proud of our education arm here at Theater Folk, and especially our Drama Teacher Academy. You want a lifeline? We've got one. Join DTA and get involved. Get involved particularly with our private Facebook group. Any question you have, answered. Any struggle you have, hundreds and hundreds. That's right, not tens of tens or 20s of 20s. I don't know if there's such a thing as that, but hundreds of teachers know exactly what you're going through. And any success you have a cheering audience. I just want to share that with you, that if you need a lifeline, we've got your back here. And you can check out what we have to offer, dramateacheracademy.com, all one word. Or you can look in the show notes, theaterfolk.com/episode189. Okay, so where can you find this podcast? We post new episodes every second Tuesday at theaterfolk.com and on our Facebook page and Twitter. You can find us on youtube.com/theaterfolk and on the Stitcher app. You can also subscribe to the Drama Teacher Podcast on iTunes. All you have to do is search for the word Theater Folk. And that's where we're going to end. Take care, my friends. Take care.